Okay, good morning. Welcome to Free Association. This is Resonance Beings of Frequency, Part 3. I think it's about 40 minutes to go. I'll just let it play till the end. With some remarkably good stuff in here.
Basically what your phone's transmitting into your head all the time that you've
put it operational into your phone. It's hard to imagine a piece of technology which has accelerated into our lives, quite like the mobile phone. 25 years ago, it was seen as little more than a gimmick. Today, 4 billion of us own one. And the average age of a child when they receive their first phone is just 8 years old. The way a mobile phone works is by sending and receiving microwave frequencies to and from the base station. So having a phone pressed against your head inevitably means your brain is being exposed to those waves. Does the brain react to this exposure? A recent American study shows it absolutely does. The work was carried out by Dr. Nora Valco. Dr. Valco and her team studied 47 healthy people for an entire year. Participants had a cell phone placed on their left and right ears. One was activated but muted, the other was turned off. Dr. Valco used brain imaging equipment to study how much glucose the brain would use during exposure.
It's a very sensitive marker to indicate if there are changes in brain activity that may be driven by a given stimulus, which in this case was the cell phone.
When the brain is stimulated, it consumes glucose in the same way a car consumes fuel.
15-minute exposure to a cell phone was associated with increases in glucose consumption by the brain, which indicates that the brain was being activated by the radio frequencies from the cell phone. This right area of the brain that was very close to the antenna showed the largest increases in metabolism as compared when the telephones were off. Even though the radio frequencies that are emitted from current cell phone technologies are very weak, they are able to activate the human brain to have an effect.
By using a muted cell phone, Dr. Valco's experiment showed that the human brain has a metabolic reaction to the presence of microwaves from a mobile phone. A metabolic reaction at levels well below the legal limit. Something many people claimed was impossible. And the reaction recorded by the doctor is secondary to an even greater concern: the way that those microwaves are actually absorbed by the brain. This has become known as SAR.
SAR is, well, first of all, it stands for specific absorption rate, and that's the measure of how much radio waves, or how much RF energy, in this case radio waves, is absorbed into the human body over a certain period of time within a certain volume. So it's a measure of the heating effect that a radio transmitter would have on your body, on the human body.
The SAR for every mobile phone is measured in this way, using an artificial head called a SAM phantom. This is filled with a glucose mixture which represents the brain. The probe measures the amount of microwave radiation that penetrates the SAM phantom skull and calculates calculates a SAR rating based on how much energy is absorbed.
For the European Union, the limit is 2 watts per kilogram, over a 10 gram average of tissue. For America, it's 1.6 watts per kilogram, over a 1 gram average of tissue. So the limit for the USA is more stringent than for the European Union. But other countries around the world, such as Australia, New Zealand, use the European limit.
Some of the most popular phones on the market emit so much microwave radiation that their SAR rating is right on the edge of the limit. Every millimeter of skull helps protect the brain against the phone's microwave radiation and therefore lowers the phone's SAR rating. Children get their first phone at the average age of 8 years old. An 8-year-old skull is considerably thinner than that of an adult. So you would hope that phones are tested against a skull which represents the thickness of that of a child.
The SAM head is an average shaped and sized human skull. The average of 10,000 people has been taken in terms of their head measurements, and this SAM Phantom head has been created, which is an average human skull.
Obviously, the head of an average human being is considerably larger than that of an 8-year-old child. But when we investigate the company that makes the SAM Phantom head, we discover that the news is even worse. The SAM Phantom isn't just the average of 10,000 people. It's the average of 10,000 US Army personnel. And US Army personnel most certainly have a larger, bigger, thicker head than the average 8-year-old. It's pretty reasonable to assume that if most mobile phones were tested against the skull of an 8-year-old, they would fail. Who is it that sets the standards?
A group of people from a committee called ICNIRP.
The people who do the work on mobile phones are, by and large, engineers. They have no idea what is going on inside the living cell, but they are pontificating on this. They make the assumption that the only thing that can affect the well-being of a living organism is if it is powerful enough to heat the tissue. But that's like saying, we know if we boil an egg, it goes hard. What they don't know is that if they don't boil the egg, it turns into a chicken. And I haven't the slightest idea how that happens, but yet they pontificate as if they do.
In 2011, the World Health Organization changed the danger rating of mobile phones, reclassing it as possibly carcinogenic to humans, based on an increased risk of contracting a geloma, the type of brain tumor associated with using a mobile phone. What was the catalyst for this abrupt change in status? There have been countless studies conducted into the possible health effects of mobile phones, some showing an effect, some showing no effect. But the most conclusive came from Leonard Hardell. He has overseen the largest and most comprehensive piece of research ever conducted, combining his own work with that of others from around the world. From the early 1990s, they have investigated the phone habits of more than 2,000 people from around the world. People with tumors such as astrocytoma and acoustic neuroma, the brain tumors associated most with mobile phone use due to their proximity to the ear. Their findings are shocking. they concluded that mobile phone use does increase the risk of a brain tumour. And they also discovered why earlier research showed no effect.
I think there's more evidence that it's carcinogenic than just possibly carcinogenic. But I can understand it in a way, because most of the cancers which will arrive haven't arrived yet. People haven't been using cell phones for long enough for the true effect to become apparent.
As is the case with other carcinogens, it takes at least 10 years before you start to see an effect from the exposure. Because the mobile phone explosion didn't really take hold until the late 1990s, it's not surprising we are just starting to see the effects right now. So what are the telecoms industry doing to protect its users from contracting a brain tumour? A flick to the far reaches of their safety manuals suggests that they are more concerned about protecting themselves. Every single phone's user guide are instructions on how far to keep your phone from your body. Instructions which, in the most part, are wholly unworkable. And what happens when the telecoms industry funds research into the harm that they are causing? And that research concludes that there is an effect. That the use of a mobile phone does play a role in the development of cancer. They tend to keep that research to themselves.
We just don't know what we're storing up with the EMF. Because the effects are largely long-term, and we have, as you say, this ubiquitous exposure and ubiquitous reliance on these exposures. We just don't fully understand yet what we're doing.
Although the epidemiology clearly shows that using a mobile phone increases the risk of contracting a brain tumour, what people like ICNIRP need to see is a definitive cause and effect. How it happens. What's the mechanism? How exactly is the cancer caused? It may seem obvious that a being so tuned in to the Earth's frequencies and so sensitive to her magnetic fields would naturally have a reaction to man-made microwaves. But for years, the telecoms industry have defended their actions by asking the same question. As it turns out, they've been asking the wrong question. The answer is melatonin.
You know, melatonin is a hormone, and believe it or not, it's made in the brain. It's made in the pineal gland of the brain, and it's got a very powerful antioxidant status compared with vitamins. For example, melatonin is 5 times as powerful as vitamin C and twice as powerful as vitamin E. And it secretes only at night, and it's at night that we need it, because that's when we go to sleep and when our brain repairs the cells of our body. And that's when melatonin comes out to do its work.
day, our body loses about 500 million cells. And at night, that's when our body replaces those cells. Through a process called cell mitosis, the dividing of cells.
And what it's doing is it's mopping up what are called free radicals. These free radicals are really the spare electrons left over from the process of making the energy which we need to repair ourselves in the first place.
Each night, as our body repairs itself, millions of free radical cells are created as a byproduct of cell mitosis. These free radical cells attack healthy cells. It is universally agreed that the free radical cell is the main causal factor in most cancer. Our body's main defense against these free radicals is its most powerful antioxidant, melatonin.
It passes into the bloodstream, and its job is to act as a natural antioxidant, a natural anti-cancer agent. Melatonin is a very, very powerful anti-cancer agent.
What it does is it acts as a what's called an oncostatic agent, that is it protects you against cancer. It controls the sleep-wake cycle so that you get a good night's sleep when you've got proper melatonin. It's an anti-aging molecule. In other words, by mopping up those free radicals, it leaves your skin and complexion looking younger. We have in our lab 12,000 studies, which we've collected over the years. And that is more studies than have ever been published on paracetamol, which is the most common headache reliever. There's more scientific interest in melatonin than there is in paracetamol.
What are the consequences of having a reduced amount of melatonin?
Yeah. Well, you have a reduced amount of melatonin. What happens then is that your immune system starts to be less competent, for a start. You tend to get sleep disturbance. You can't get off to sleep. Or if you do, you wake up and can't get back to sleep. You can have heart complications because melatonin protects your heart as well. And you're much more prone to disease because your immune system is not functioning at its best. So these are some of the things that happen when you have a lowered melatonin level. And for example, the average woman with breast cancer has only got 1/10 of the melatonin of a normal woman of her age. And for people with prostate cancer, they've got less than half the melatonin that they should have. Autistic children have less than half the melatonin levels that they should enjoy.
Reduced melatonin in night shift workers, because they're working at night and exposed to light, they don't produce nocturnal melatonin, is known to produce a 50% increase in breast cancer risk. And the International Agency for Research on Cancer, IARC, has actually classed night shift work as a class 2A probable carcinogen because of this melatonin reduction.
There are lots of studies now showing that people on night shifts or people who are blind have different cancer rates than the average population. And most of those studies support the view that the absence or the lowered melatonin has an adverse effect on health.
Because the body only repairs itself at night, melatonin is only produced when the pineal gland senses that no light is present.
what happens is that the pineal gland is light sensitive. It's sitting right where your brain receives signals from your eyes, a crossover point in the middle. It's called the suprachiasmatic nuclei. And the connections from there goes directly to the pineal gland to tell it whether there's any light around or not. If there's light around, then there's also interference with the signals the brain wants to send to our cells in order to repair them. So it says there's no point in the brain sending these signals out to our cells to tell them to repair, because there's so much interference that they won't hear it. So it waits, the brain waits until it's dark.
Research has shown that there's an effect on melatonin production from electric fields, magnetic fields, radio waves.
Right, well, the Battelle Institute in America has done a lot of work on this way back from the late 1970s, in fact. And their scientists there, Barry Wilson and Dick Stevens and people like that, started thinking that because we know that if you turn the light on, then the brain stops making melatonin. They thought, well, maybe our brains can't distinguish between electric fields and that we make ourselves artificially, and the natural light that we all know happens during the daytime, because we just don't make melatonin in the daytime, for very good biological reasons. So they thought, well, maybe these electric fields are suppressing the synthesis of melatonin, and that in turn is leading to cancer, breast cancer particularly, in women, because they don't have the immunological protection that they would otherwise have.
So the brain interprets radio waves as being light waves?
Yeah, we don't know the difference.
The hypothesis that the pineal gland cannot distinguish between light frequencies and man-made frequencies is certainly backed up by a wealth of research.
I think it's pretty conclusive that electric fields, magnetic fields, radio waves affect the production of melatonin.
This research, which shows that the kestrel melatonin levels fall with exposure, that white storks nesting on buildings near to radio masts have lowered progeny compared with stork nests a long way away from radio masts, studies on ants, studies on bees, and studies on birds of various kinds, studies on marine mammals, all point in the same direction.
But then there are studies in the laboratory of cells in the pineal gland, which actually synthesizes the melatonin, and looking at the effects of magnetic fields on those cells. And at virtually every stage in the synthesis of melatonin, it's been shown that magnetic fields disturbs the actual production of melatonin. So you see, the evidence is in all aspects of the pathway of melatonin production, that the inhibition of melatonin production by magnetic fields, the research covers really every aspect of that pathway.
Would you say that it's almost conclusive?
Yes, I would say it is almost conclusive.
Thank you.
of our body means it is able to counter the production of free radicals with the production of melatonin. We have created in ourselves a precise balance, a perfect system of defense. It has taken our body millions of years to perfect this technique. A technique created based on the surroundings we have evolved in. But over the last few decades, our surroundings have changed. And changed exponentially. To the naked eye, the world appears to be the same. But at a cellular level, it is the biggest change in environment life has ever encountered. It stands to reason that such a gargantuan change would inevitably upset such a delicate balance. And the consequences of our bodies not producing the right amount of melatonin could be disastrous. Scientists around the world now believe that free radicals could be the causal factor in every known disease, not just cancer.
In the beginning of the 1900s, childhood leukemia was a medical rarity. We've seen nothing but an increase in childhood leukemia ever since that point. It's going up every year by about 2%. And that applies to many other disorders as well. Autism, brain tumors, cancer. Cancer rates in the 1910s were probably half of what they are today. And many other diseases are being connected by studies, by scientific studies, with exposure to electromagnetic fields and radiations. Not just power lines, but also to radio fields and microwave fields. Because we've in the last 50 years really, we've immersed ourselves in an ocean of electromagnetic radiation. It's all around us now. Invisible, we can't see it, but we know it's there. Every time you lift up your mobile phone, you know it's there.
It's very, very hard to turn the clock back, if not impossible to turn the clock back. But we need to be aware of the adverse health effects so that we have the choice of taking precaution against the exposures, if that's what we wish to do, that's what we need to do.
What worries me are things that are actually happening now.
Right.
That we haven't paid enough attention to, perhaps, and one of the things that's happening is autism, or give it its proper name, autistic spectrum disorders.
Do you think we're getting to a point in science where we almost don't have a control group to be able to test things like this? Because almost everybody has a mobile phone, almost everybody has Wi-Fi, almost everybody is exposed to electromagnetic fields.
Yes, we are reaching a situation where so many people are exposed to electromagnetic fields from mobile phones or Wi-Fi that we no longer have a control population to look at the difference between people, the health of people who are exposed versus the health of people who are not exposed. If I can take an analogy, we did find out that smoking caused lung cancer. That was because some people did not smoke and they were a control group. If everyone had smoked, we may never have found that smoking caused lung cancer. And everyone would have been dying of lung cancer, and it would have been regarded as a sort of natural disease without ever having a link with smoking. What's happening with mobile phone exposure is we are losing this population of people who are not exposed. Even the few people who don't own a mobile phone are surrounded by the radiation from the mobile phone when they go shopping, when they go on a train, wherever they go.
It's not just the canary down the mine like myself. Eventually, if you simply increase the electromagnetic fields in the atmosphere, which we're doing, and we've now got a million times more electromagnetic fields, microwaves in the environment than we had 30 years ago, eventually it'll start to affect you.
It's very, very hard to say where we might be in 15 years' time, but I would very much hope that in a few years' time, we do recognize just how much these ill health effects are actually costing society. And then we might wake up and look at the causes and realize we have to do something about the causes.
We are a brilliant, yet complex organism. The way that our body functions isn't by chance, nor is it something which has happened overnight. Like every other creature on this planet, we have adapted into the environment we exist in. An environment which, since the beginning of time, has had a delicate balance of fields and resonances. These phenomena don't just surround us, they make us what we are. The cells of our body communicate with each other using light frequencies. Our DNA uses electromagnetic frequencies to reproduce itself. At the core of everything are protons and electrons, positive and negative, making all life magnetic. We are, as all life is, equipped with cryptochrome cells, which allows us to sense those fields in ways we barely understand. We are beings of frequency, electricity, light, and magnetism. And to become this way has taken millions of years, a process which started with the very first cell. Although we have embraced the wireless technology and accepted it into our everyday lives, at a cellular level, our bodies haven't. The frequencies that now surround us are as alien to ourselves as they would be to our eyes, if only we could see them. Our children are being born into a world that their bodies simply cannot understand. Where will all this lead? As this film is being made, 4G technology is being rolled out around the world. To accommodate this, the ceiling levels are being increased. Wi-Fi is in almost every single home, school and business, surrounding us constantly. Deck phone technology is the norm in almost every single household. At a time when the industries responsible should be displaying caution, they are displaying a reckless disregard for our long-term health. Money talks. And they are about as likely to develop a conscience as the tobacco industries did. If there's going to be a change, it's not going to come from them. It's going to have to come from us. We just need to open our eyes and see the problem.
Would the MTHR, do you think, fund research into radio waves affecting melatonin, given that this is the mechanism that people seem to point to, that mobile phones affect the production of melatonin? Melatonin is an antioxidant, a free radical vacuum cleaner, if you like.
When we issue a call for research proposals, as we're doing at the moment, well, we highlight areas that are of particular interest. We invite applications, proposals across the spectrum. But it would have to be prioritised alongside the other applications that we get. We only have a limited pot of money, but we don't rule out funding research on melatonin. It's not one of the areas that we've identified as a priority at the moment.
Okay, that's it, I think. That's the end of Resonance Beings of Frequency. So, three parts seems to have worked reasonably well with that. And I'll be back later on today because I'm in that kind of mood again. So there'll be another podcast, another radio show later on today. I'm going to go for my first cup of coffee of the day now. It's exactly 9 o'clock in the morning. So I'll see you later on.